All opposed?
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman, I ask for a recorded vote.
A recorded vote is ordered. The clerk will call the roll. Thank you, Mr. Martin.
Chairman Harris.
Aye.
Chairman Harris votes aye. Mr. Roybacher. Mr. Bartlett. Mr. Lucas.
Aye.
Mr. Lucas votes aye. Mrs. Biggert. Mr. Aiken. Mr. Aiken votes aye. Mr. Nagebauer. Mr. Nagebauer votes aye. Mr. Brown.
Aye.
Mr. Brown votes aye. Mr. Fleischman.
Aye.
Mr. Fleischman votes aye. Mr. Hall.
Aye.
Mr. Hall votes aye. Mr. Miller.
No.
Mr. Miller votes no. Ms. Woolsey.
No.
Ms. Woolsey votes no. Mr. Lujan. Mr. Tonko.
No.
Mr. Tonko votes no. Ms. Lofgren.
No.
Ms. Lofgren votes no. Mr. McNerney.
No.
Mr. McNerney votes no. Ms. Johnson.
No.
Ms. Johnson votes no.
Have all members voted? Anyone wish to change their vote? Will the clerk report the vote?
Mr. Chairman, 7 members vote aye and 6 members vote no.
The motion to table having been passed, the motion is laid on the table.
Mr. Chairman, I move that the committee be in recess for a period of not less than 1 week to allow the gentleman from HBO to apply for press credentials and to allow ABC News and any other credentialed press organization to provide the overnight notice that they intend to film this hearing.
Mr. Chairman.
The gentleman from Georgia.
I move to table the motion.
There's a motion to table the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed?
No.
In the opinion of the chair, the ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman, I ask for a recorded vote.
Recorded vote is requested. The clerk will call the roll.
Mr. Harris.
Aye.
Mr. Harris votes aye. Mr. Roybacher. Mr. Bartlett. Mr. Lucas.
Aye.
Mr. Lucas votes aye. Mrs. Biggert. Mr. Aiken.
Aye.
Mr. Aiken votes aye. Mr. Nagebauer. Mr. Nagebauer votes aye. Mr. Brown.
Aye.
Mr. Brown votes aye. Mr. Fleischman. Mr. Fleischman votes aye. Mr. Hall.
Aye.
Mr. Hall votes aye. Mr. Miller.
No.
Mr. Miller votes no. Ms. Woolsey.
No.
Ms. Woolsey votes no. Mr. Lujan. Mr. Tonko.
No.
Mr. Tonko votes no. Mrs. Lofgren.
No.
Ms. Lofgren votes no. Mr. McNerney.
No.
Mr. McNerney votes no. Ms. Johnson.
No.
Ms. Johnson votes no.
Roll.
Mr. Chairman, 7 members vote aye and 6 members vote no.
The majority voting to table the motion. The motion is tabled. Thank you very much for, I'm sorry for the delay, but as the chairman of the full committee has said, if the minority wants a vote on something, they'll get a vote on it each and every time. I want to welcome everyone to this morning's hearing to examine EPA's approach to groundwater research near Pavilion, Wyoming. The increased production and use of clean natural gas is the source of one of the few bright spots in our current economic climate. In 2010, the shale gas industry supported 600,000 jobs, and a Federal Reserve economist estimates that lower natural gas prices enabled by increased production saved American consumers more than $16 billion in home energy costs last year. And, of course, the price of natural gas has come down since last year. So it would be more than $16 billion in home energy costs saved each year from natural gas. Wyoming is a perfect case study. Tens of thousands of people are employed in oil and gas production, and royalties and taxes on that production delivered almost $2 billion going to state and local taxpayer coffers, more than $3,400 for every citizen in the state. However, in a remarkable display of arrogance and disregard for the plain facts, the president, in his State of the Union address last week, proclaimed his support for expanded shale gas production, while at the same time allowing every part of his administration, from the EPA to the Department of the Interior to the CDC, to attack these practices through scientific innuendo and regulatory straitjacketing. In the past year, the subcommittee has held numerous hearings on EPA's use and abuse of science. Time and again, we have demonstrated that this agency is substituting outcome-driven science for rigorous objective science. EPA's investigation of groundwater contamination in Pavilion appears to be yet another example of politics trumping policy and advocacy trumping science. The scientific method is a process characterized by the development of a hypothesis, creation of a rigorous experiment to test it, documentation of observations, and objective analysis of results. Scientists, in fact, frequently believe that sharing the data is an important part of the scientific process. As far as I can see, EPA never managed to get even farther than the first step of most normal scientific investigation. EPA will no doubt emphasize today that this is a draft report that will soon undergo peer review. This fails to acknowledge, however, the impact this report has already had. The day after the draft report was released, the governor of Delaware announced that it was the validation for his decision to vote against development of natural gas in the Delaware River Basin. This illustrates the power of EPA's press release science to drive public opinion and even critical decisions by policymakers. The key question before us today is, was the investigation conducted in a scientifically robust manner that justifies all this potential economic upheaval? I look forward to hearing from witnesses, but I am concerned about indications that EPA's approach in Wyoming has been poorly conducted, unnecessarily alarming, and fits within the pattern of an outcome-driven regulate for any excuse philosophy at the agency. Transparency is central to getting to the bottom of these scientific questions. Regardless that the president boasts that he leads the, quote, most transparent administration in history, and despite receiving multiple requests from state, media, and interested stakeholders, interestingly enough, it was not until late last night, the eve of this hearing, that the EPA finally disclosed data essential to meaningfully evaluate their findings. Now, note that the original deadline for comment passed 2 weeks ago. Well, I'm not sure how the EPA thought that people were going to make decisions on the adequacy of this study without the information that now the EPA, I guess, feels essential to make those kind of determinations. Now, while I'm pleased that EPA posted 622 documents to its website last night, now, I would offer that maybe they should follow the same rules the House has, that you need 3 days of putting something out before you should actually consider it. Clearly, that's not enough time for this committee to take that into consideration in the hearing today. It is unfortunate that this transparency appears only to have been compelled by the calling of a congressional oversight hearing. But then again, maybe that's the purpose of the 112th Congress. Compounding this problem is the complete failure to collaborate with experts and institutions with knowledge in the unique hydrogeology of this region. For example, the state of Wyoming, despite possessing decades of experience in groundwater assessments, was not consulted with about the most important aspects of this investigation. And we'll hear from one of our witnesses today about that. The agency did not even consult with the U.S. Geological Survey before releasing the report. A sister government agency that has extensive understanding of aquifer complexity and geographical characteristics in the region. Also concerning is EPA's apparent failures to follow its own laboratory protocols, Superfund site requirements, peer review handbook, information quality guidelines, as well as U.S. Geological Survey recommendations for drilling and sampling monitoring wells. Hypocritically, these are behaviors and practices that the agency would never accept from any state or private sector entity conducting a comprehensive groundwater investigation. Finally, I'm afraid EPA's actions in Pavilion demonstrate a disturbing loss of perspective. The principal concern of this investigation should always have been the health and welfare of the people living near Pavilion, Wyoming. Unfortunately, in its single-minded pursuit of the hydraulic fracturing smoking gun, EPA appears to have lost focus on identifying the real causes of and real solutions to drinking water quality problems locally in Pavilion, Wyoming. I want to thank the witnesses for appearing before the subcommittee, and I look forward to a constructive discussion. The chair now recognizes Mr. Miller for 5 minutes of an opening statement.
Thank you, Chairman Harris. The stated purpose of this hearing is to examine the methodology, the quality assurance, the peer review process, and the like of an EPA study that links hydraulic fracturing or fracking and groundwater contamination near Pavilion, Wyoming. The principal criticism of the EPA is that the EPA's procedures have lacked transparency. EPA conducted the study in response to requests by citizens in the area. After fracking operations began there, they began to suffer headaches, sore throat, nausea, sinus problems, and other symptoms that are known to be associated with the contaminants found in Pavilion's drinking water supply by the EPA study. It is a draft report. It's the product of 3 years of research. The report is subject to a public comment period, followed by peer review. EPA has extended the public comment period for 45 days from 45 days to 90 days at the request of industry. Public comments are due by March 12, 2012. EPA is now soliciting also nominations for disinterested experts to serve as peer reviewers. Real scientists, not members of the science committee, real scientists. Once selected, the peer review panel will have 30 days to complete their work. In other words, the Pavilion study is a work in progress, and all the criticisms we will hear today are part of the public comment and part of the peer review process. The Pavilion study does not call for any regulation of fracking. Their study is part of risk assessment, not risk management. Risk assessment informs risk management. Once we know the risk, EPA will then weigh the economic benefits and potential public health consequences of fracking to determine what safeguards, if any, are appropriate to develop needed natural gas resources while protecting the environment and public health. Although the industry and their political allies dismiss the concerns about fracking as uninformed hysteria, their refusal to provide basic information about the operations, their operations, and their efforts to hinder independent scientific research like the Pavilion study cannot be reassuring to citizens living near fracking operations. The industry has refused to disclose the chemicals they inject into the earth, claiming the information is proprietary, their secret sauce. But the draft Pavilion study is not the only study to find groundwater contamination and at least one instance of surface water contamination near fracking operations by chemicals not ordinarily found in nature and known to be part of the secret sauce. Some of the chemicals are known carcinogens. In short, the public concern about fracking seems very reasonable. The question is not whether we are pro-drilling or anti-drilling. The question is whether we will drill with our eyes open. The public wants to know if fracking is safe, and they're entitled to know. But the industry and their political allies just say, in effect, move along. There's nothing to see here. The integrity of scientific research at EPA is properly the subject of the subcommittee's interest, although none of the Republican witnesses today appear to satisfy the requirements of disinterested expertise to serve as peer reviewers. With no disinterested scientists as witnesses, a reasonable question is whether this hearing is really about the science, the integrity of the science, or if it's just a big wink and nod to the industry that the majority is on their side no matter what. I yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. If there are members who wish to submit additional opening statements, your statements will be added to the record at this point. And I'd like to introduce our witness panel at this time. And, again, I'm going to apologize to the witnesses for the delay we had at the beginning of the hearing. But, again, you know, one of our principles is we make certain that, you know, minority or majority, if someone makes a motion, they're going to get a vote. Our first witness today is Mr. James B. Martin. Mr. Martin is the Regional Administrator for Region 8 at the Environmental Protection Agency. He's worked in the environmental field for nearly 30 years. Prior to his career in public service, Mr. Martin managed Western Resource Advocates, a nonprofit focused on energy, public lands, and water issues. Our next witness will be Mr. Tom Dole. Mr. Dole is the State Oil and Gas Supervisor at the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission. Prior to becoming supervisor, he had 38 years experience in petroleum engineering and management, primarily in Wyoming and the Northern Rockies. He's Wyoming's official representative to the Interstate Oil and Gas Compact Commission. Our third witness is Ms. Kathleen Sagama. Ms. Sagama is the Vice President of Government and Public Affairs at the Western Energy Alliance. She handles federal legislative, public lands, environmental, and regulatory issues for companies involved in all aspects of exploration and production of oil and natural gas in the West. Our final witness is Dr. Bernard Goldstein. Dr. Goldstein is a professor and dean emeritus at the Graduate School of Public Health at the University of Pittsburgh. He's a physician, board certified in internal medicine, hematology, and toxicology. He also served as assistant administrator for EPA's Office of Research and Development from 1983 to 1985. I want to thank you all for appearing before the subcommittee today, and again, thank you very much for your patience in waiting to testify. As our witnesses should know, spoken testimony is limited to 5 minutes each, after which the members of the committee will have 5 minutes each to ask questions. I now recognize our first witness, Mr. James Martin from the Environmental Protection Agency.
And I'm the regional administrator for the Environmental Protection Agency's Region 8. That is a region that encompasses the Dakotas, Montana, Utah, Wyoming, and Colorado. I'm here today to talk with you about the agency's groundwater investigation at Pavilion, Wyoming. In the spring of 2008, EPA staff at our regional office were contacted by a group of people from the rural community of Pavilion in central Wyoming. They had noticed a change in their drinking water, in its odor, its taste, and its color, and wanted to know not only what had happened, but whether their water was safe to drink. While the state had directed their operating company to test the water, the results were inconclusive and left the residents without those critical answers. After conferring with our state colleagues and with the Northern Arapaho and Eastern Shoshone tribes of the Wind River Indian Reservation, EPA agreed in 2008 to conduct additional sampling. To ensure as thorough an approach as possible, we developed a plan that included a broad list of compounds at the lowest levels of detection. We conducted our initial round of sampling in March 2009. We looked at both domestic drinking water wells and at two of the wells that serve the town of Pavilion just west of the Pavilion oil and gas field. We found that roughly a third of the domestic wells had detections of organic compounds, including methane, total petroleum hydrocarbons, and some other organics the lab was able to tentatively identify but not quantify. Our phase two sampling was again planned in collaboration with the tribes, the state, and the operating company, in this case in Canada. Our goal was to better quantify the chemicals present in order to assess potential health risks and to identify potential sources. Again, we considered a wide range of potential sources in developing the sampling plan. The sampling occurred in January of 2010, but in a more refined area based on the results from our phase one sampling. Again, we confirmed that organic chemicals of concern were present in 16 of the 17 domestic well samples, including methane and petroleum hydrocarbons. We also sampled shallow pit monitoring wells and found very high concentrations of several contaminants. We shared our data with the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry. Based both on those data and on a set of uncertainties, that agency recommended that residents use an alternative source of water for drinking and cooking, and that they ventilate their bathrooms while running their showers. However, we concluded that without further data, we still could not identify potential sources of the contamination. Another round of consultation with stakeholders occurred, and we then decided to construct two deep monitoring wells. Those wells were constructed in the summer of 2010, and we collected samples from both wells on two separate occasions. Throughout, we applied the most stringent quality assurance protocols used by the agency. Those results showed very high alkalinity at deeper levels of the aquifer, petroleum-related organic compounds, including benzene at 50 times the maximum contamination level set by the Safe Drinking Water Act, and a number of synthetic organic compounds that do not occur naturally in groundwater. EPA's technical team evaluated these data with great care and weighed a range of possible explanations that might fit the entire data set, as well as the regional geology and the field production practices. Based upon multiple lines of reasoning, we have tentatively concluded that the drinking water aquifer contains compounds likely associated with gas production activities, including hydraulic fracturing. We make clear in the draft report that our analysis is limited to the particular geologic conditions in the Pavilion gas field and should not be assumed to apply to fracturing in other geologic settings. It should be noted that fracturing in Pavilion is taking place in and below the drinking water aquifer and in close proximity to drinking water wells. As we were moving toward completion of the report, we asked three external scientists to review the sampling and analysis as a sort of final check-in. We also broadly shared the data and then conducted a series of meetings with the state, the tribes, BLM, and BIA, and the company to gather their concerns and assessments. In late 2011, we released the draft report. We provided notice of our intention to subject this report to a formal external peer review by scientists and engineers unaffiliated with EPA. Contemporaneously, we sought public comment on the draft report and have since extended the deadline for comment to March 12. To support this review, we have released an unprecedented amount of raw data, quality assurance documentation, and other supporting information. In addition, we are working with the state, the tribes, and others to develop a plan for additional investigation at the site. In conclusion, I believe EPA acted carefully, thoughtfully, and transparently in responding to the concerns raised by local residents in 2008. We have applied the highest standards of scientific rigor and have operated in the spirit of transparency and collaboration. There is more work to be done, and collaboration and transparency will continue to be the hallmarks of our investigation. With that, I yield the floor, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much. I now recognize our second witness, Mr. Tom Dahl from the Wyoming Oil and Gas Conservation Commission.
Thank you. I am here this morning as a representative of the Honorable Governor of the State of Wyoming, Matthew H. Mead, and provide the following testimony regarding the EPA's groundwater science at Pavilion, Wyoming. The Pavilion Wind River Formation natural gas field was discovered in 1960. By 2006, full field development was completed. This greater Pavilion gas field has 168 wells. Currently, there are 78 wells on tribal and 58 wells on private minerals. The last wells in this greater Pavilion gas field area that were hydraulically fractured occurred in 2007. In 2008, EPA reacted to complaints from a few domestic well owners claiming taste and odor problems following hydraulic fracturing at nearby gas production wells. EPA conducted sampling and testing of 42 shallow domestic and stock water wells. And in August 2010, results of that testing was made public. EPA drilled two monitoring wells in the Pavilion natural gas field in the summer of 2010. Both monitoring wells were completed at depths considerably below that of the shallow water supply wells. EPA via email notified the Wyoming Department of Environmental Quality of the plan to drill the monitoring wells literally as the rig was moving in. And so I would question whether that is consultation with the state or not. Sampling of the two monitoring wells occurred in October 2010 and again in April 2011. Data was made public in November, followed by the Pavilion draft report on groundwater in December 2011. The complex geology of the Wind River Formation in central Wyoming makes identification of potential contamination pathways difficult. The sands are discontinuous and are individual lenses within a shale matrix. Visualize individual potato chips layered in a bowl. Some are in contact and most are not. The Wind River Formation is the shallow aquifer and is also the deep natural gas reservoir. EPA's draft report is based on two monitoring well sampling events. EPA found a single detect of 2-butoxyethanol out of 9 lab samples analyzed, using an analytical method still under development. Actual sample values for organics are so low they are measured in parts per billion. This chemical compound at the 12.7 parts per billion detected is acceptable for drinking water supplied from a public water system. The EPA review of material safety data sheets found 2-butoxyethanol as a compound in foam additives used in hydraulic fracturing, but ignored its use in other applications such as metal coatings and solvents. EPA concluded that hydraulic fracturing caused groundwater contamination. Now I'd like to focus on the natural gas wells in the immediate area of these two EPA monitoring wells. None of these natural gas wells have been hydraulically fractured since 2005. EPA's data is only applicable to the natural gas field in central Wyoming. This fact is lost in the public reaction to the EPA announcement, and a worldwide damnation of hydraulic fracturing has occurred. The report provides no data to show how these two EPA monitoring wells represent water supply wells used by anyone in the Pavilion natural gas field. Wyoming State Agency's technical questions have yet to be addressed, and I've been informed now that the new data has been released and posted on the EPA webpage. The EPA report also ignores the ongoing public outreach investigation of natural gas well integrity and landowner identified sites. EPA has not addressed other possible surface pathways of groundwater contamination. Wyoming State Agency scientists contend that chemical compounds detected were introduced during the drilling, completion, testing, and sampling of the EPA monitoring wells. Further well testing is required. Wyoming has historically regulated hydraulic fracturing. Since 2010, Wyoming is the only state to require chemical disclosure prior to the initiation of the treatment. Disclosure of the actual chemical compounds used is also required post-treatment. This well information is public and is posted on the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission webpage. In conclusion, the EPA Pavilion draft report contains poor quality data and science. State of Wyoming experts do not support the EPA's data or analysis and recommend further testing before any conclusion of groundwater contamination by any source be made. The goal is for residents of Pavilion to have clean water and conclusive answers about the source of the area's groundwater problems. Additional short-term sampling and long-term science-based efforts are being planned by the state of Wyoming and the USGS for the Pavilion area. Thank you for providing this opportunity to address this subcommittee regarding Pavilion, Wyoming.
Thank you very much. I now recognize our third witness, Ms. Kathleen Sagama from the Western Energy Alliance.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ranking Member Miller and members of the committee, thanks for the opportunity today. Western Energy Alliance represents about 400 companies engaged in all aspects of environmentally responsible oil and gas development in Wyoming and across the West. There is no fail-safe process, and accidents may happen with any human endeavor. One of the main roles of environmental regulation is to ensure that the risk is managed properly, that appropriate procedures are in place to prevent public exposure, and in the event of an accident, that problems are corrected. Oil and natural gas producers are held to high scientific standards to ensure operations are properly designed, executed, and controlled. Because civil or criminal penalties can be levied on producers who fail to fulfill regulatory requirements, it's imperative that regulators are also held to high standards. Regulators must be required to show that sound science and correct procedures were followed when establishing regulations and when determining if a company failed to meet a regulatory standard. If sound science and accepted regulatory practices are not followed, findings cannot stand up in court, and arbitrary regulatory practices sow uncertainty. As a democratic society, the legal culpability inherent in our regulatory system is not the only consideration. The court of public opinion is also important. Without public support, activities such as oil and natural gas development would not be possible. My industry struggles against outrageous information in the public arena and that overstates our environmental impact and propagates blatantly false information about hydraulic fracturing. Every day we hear members of the media and unaccountable environmental groups make statements about supposedly thousands of cases of contamination. Never mind that EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson and most regulators from large oil and natural gas producing states have felt compelled to issue statements about the lack of cases of contamination from fracking. Once misinformation gets out in the public, it takes on a life of its own and is almost impossible to correct. This misinformation has caused local communities and citizens to fear a process that is safe. The fear leads to development roadblocks, depriving state economies of tens of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars of economic activity. Furthermore, unfounded fears about fracking divert limited federal and state resources away from activities that truly pose a threat to underground sources of drinking water. The Groundwater Protection Council considers fracking low risk, especially compared to other threats such as agricultural runoff, septic systems, sewer lines, and wastewater treatment sources. The public trusts EPA to follow the law and use sound science as the foundation of its regulatory work. When EPA releases a report stating that fracking may be the cause of contamination, the public expects that to be backed by science. However, in the case of the draft Pavilion report, EPA's own data contained within doesn't support the conclusions presented up front. A conclusion with such broad implications should have first been tested through a scientific peer review of the work. We are left wondering why EPA would jump to conclusions. Why would EPA release the report without state input and scientific peer review? These are disturbing questions to ask about an agency that should have the public trust and points to the fact that EPA is also a political body, not a disinterested scientific institution. As this committee knows, fundamental standards of science include objectivity, repeatability, transparency, and peer review. It's hard to call something scientific if it doesn't include these basic elements, yet we've seen examples from EPA that do not. Industry is particularly concerned since Congress has charged EPA with conducting a scientific study of fracking. EPA's recent actions raise questions in our minds about the quality of the science for the broader fracking study as well. The Pavilion report and what we've observed so far in the fracking study cause great concern to industry as we see a lack of transparency, unscientific methods, and failure to perform peer review. I ask this committee to help ensure that the issues of scientific credibility are resolved. I believe in general that better oversight is needed of EPA science. There's an inherent conflict given EPA's regulatory and compliance roles and its ability to conduct objective science. Given that conflict, it is especially important that EPA science be properly peer-reviewed. Western Energy Alliance recommends that standards for EPA-conducted science be tightened. Fracking is vital to the supply of American energy. If we lose the public's confidence and cannot continue to develop oil and natural gas in the United States because of unfounded rumors and invalid science, America will deprive itself of significant job and economic growth and will continue to import energy from unfriendly countries. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. And I recognize our fourth and final witness, Dr. Bernard Goldstein of the University of Pittsburgh Graduate School of Public Health. Doctor.
Testify. I apologize, but I will be showing slides. It's part of being a professor. I'd lose my professorial appointment. My three major points are that the public is genuinely concerned about the potential health impacts, and there's genuine reason for the concern, and that there's almost no support for the research needed to respond to the public, and that lack of support is both short-sighted and counterproductive. There's a fair amount of public confusion, which I think is really important to put in context of this particular hearing. The public is hearing that hydrofracking is a new technology that now permits extraction in our area of the country. It's the Marcellus Shale. And, oh, by the way, it's been around for decades, but so don't worry. It can't be both. Decades ago, hydrofracking was done with 50,000 gallons of water, straight shot down, vertical, no horizontal drilling. Now it's 5 to 8 million gallons. There's all these additional bells and whistles that have been added to it, and we are told, although there's a lot of secrecy, that the fracking chemicals have been changed. We're also confused about the fact that, just as we're hearing here, there's no proof that hydrofracking has ever caused groundwater contamination. Well, that's a technical definition of hydrofracking, which has to do with the release 5,000 foot underground or 1,000 foot underground of these chemicals. It is not really what the public understands as hydrofracking, which is anything that happens with these chemicals from the time that the drill pad is leveled till 20 years from now, when we hope everybody goes away and everything is restored to where it was. So that this confusion is very much behind causing even anger by folks. This is an analysis of the reasons given by those not in favor of Marcellus drilling, and you'll see that health concerns are a large part of this. Part of the reason for concern is unnecessary secrecy. My example of how ludicrous this is comes from the Gulf oil spill. Secrecy about this particular component, this organic sulfonic acid salt at the bottom, this proprietary drug, contributed greatly to the stress experienced by Gulf residents. It turns out that this secret ingredient is a commonly used over-the-counter stool softener. We have often prescribed, and I can tell that at least one of us in this room has used. It's of no toxicological significance to humans. I don't know about the fish, But why do we keep this secret? One of my major concerns as a toxicologist and as a physician is the mixture issue. We have lots of chemicals that are being used. They're continually changing. We don't know what's in there. I can't be responsive to someone who calls and says, my kid has such and such problems. I'm worried about this disease, because I don't really know what's being done there. And not only do we have this concern about the individual chemicals, there's this mixture issue, plus there's even a greater mixture issue having to do with the fracking fluids that return, the produce water, the flowback water, which contain not only the residual fracking chemicals, but also everything that's been brought up from underground. And we don't really know what's going to happen with these flowback fluids. I can't, in this brief presentation, do more than list some of the potential health issues that should be addressed. And I must respectfully disagree with the distinguished chair about the importance of index cases. In my experience, index cases are simply not very germane to environmental medicine. Let me cite our analysis of the Pennsylvania Department of Environmental Protection's data on violations by companies involved in Marcellus drilling, shale drilling. Some of these companies are to be commended. They've had no violations. Some should not be in business. And as long as that persists, we're going to have major problems. And finally, it's disappointing that despite the fact that the various advisory committees have been put together, this is the president, the governor of Maryland, the governor of Pennsylvania, that really look at health and welfare and are concerned about protection of public health. We've examined these three advisory committees. There are 52 members, and there's nobody with any health background in any of these advisory committees, no physicians, nurses, toxicologists, risk assessors, et cetera. So let me conclude with what I think are three certainties of what are going to happen. First, there's going to be surprises. There already have been. Bromides in water, earthquakes. There will be improved technology. Industry has to pay for their fracking chemicals. It's in their interest to recycle them. Industry should not be releasing the chemicals that come out, in fact, because they should be selling them. They want to sell them. But we've found over these past 40 years that it requires a lot of oversight, a lot of rigorous oversight to make this happen. It won't happen by itself. And finally, there certainly will be adverse health impacts that are going to be reported in these various areas. They will be statistically significant. That doesn't mean they're causal. There's enough different diseases in different areas. People are going to wake up and say, we've never had this much pancreatic cancer or autism or leukemia before those wells were drilled. And at that point, to try to figure out in retrospect what's really going on is a little too late. It's cost ineffective to do it then. We need to start doing it now if we're going to be able to get the greatest benefit we can. Or, in fact, the decisions will be made based upon litigation, not based upon science. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Doctor. And I sympathize with you because, you know, when I was an academician, and whenever I would give a talk, I always gave it from slides. So then I get into the legislature and find, you don't do that anymore. But I thank you very much for your presentation. And now we will begin reminding members the committee rules limit questioning to 5 minutes. The chair at this point will open the round of questions, and I recognize myself for the first 5 minutes. Thank you very much, Mr. Martin, for being here. I understand Dr. Anastas couldn't, so I appreciate you being here. I want to ask you, though, and just confirm for me a couple of just facts. First of all, is the only chemical that was found in those wells that was above drinking water standards for a public well was benzene, is that correct, in the two monitoring wells, the two deep monitoring wells?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, but could you repeat your question?
Sure. Was the only what substances were found at concentrations above the drinking water levels for that are accepted for public water supplies?
Benzene was the most notable example, but we don't.
But which other ones?
I believe.
The only one. Okay, so it was the only one, and it's true. It was only found in one of the two monitoring wells. Isn't that right?
No, I don't believe that's correct.
I suggest you look at your draft report, which suggests that monitoring well did not have measurable amounts, and monitoring well two had them.
I don't have the report in front of me, Mr.
Okay, well, I do. I suggest you also check that you had two measurements separated by 6 months. Is that correct?
That's in those wells. Correct, yes.
And isn't it true that the benzene level was one half the original reported amount when you went from in the second sampling in well two?
Mr. Chairman, you have the data before you. I don't.
Well, this is your report. You signed on to this press. You approved this press release, didn't you?
I don't know to what.
This is the press release from October 8th. From December 8th, releasing the draft study, the company of the release of the draft study. You've read the report. I tell you, you've read the report.
Multiple times, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Well, I suggest you look at that table where it was. So what we've done here is we've said that we only have one contaminant. It was only found in one well. And, oh, by the way, there was a twofold difference in the concentration in that well, and it fell from the time of the first measurement to the time of the second measurement. Is it true? Because there's been testimony in front of this committee. There have been 1.2 million applications of hydrofracturing in the United States, and there still has not been a documented contamination of drinking water above the levels acceptable for a public system. Is that correct? There still is no documented case.
That's information to which I can't testify, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. So you certainly can't refute the testimony in front of this committee previously on that.
I can't.
Okay. I know why you can't, because there still isn't. And although the EPA might want to suggest that in this press release, I think that it might not be true. Now you state in your testimony that, quote, our analysis is limited to the particular geologic conditions in the Pavilion gas field and should not be assumed to apply to fracturing in other geological settings. Now, that's an extension of what you actually had in the press release, because the press release didn't actually say, and, oh, by the way, don't extrapolate this, don't apply this to fracturing in other settings. And you also went on to say in testimony that these wells had, quote, production conditions different from those in many other parts of the country, end quotes. And having read the report, having the testimony of a geologist, of someone with the expert in the local geology, I can understand that. But I want to be clear, regardless of what the peer review process determines about this report's findings and validities and all the rest, does the EPA think that the results of this investigation can be reasonably extrapolated to modern hydraulic fracturing being used, for example, in the Marcellus Shale, which, of course, runs through my state?
Mr. Chairman, the circumstances, the conditions, the geologic conditions that exist with the Marcellus Shale are significantly different. In the Pavilion case, we were looking at production that occurred in an underground source of drinking water, an aquifer, at depths of as shallow as 1,200 feet, where the deepest domestic drinking water well was 800 feet. I believe in the Marcellus Shale, you're looking at production occurring from 5,000 feet or deeper,
yeah,
below ground surface,
right.
So they're very different.
So you believe that these results really can't be reasonably extrapolated to the Marcellus Shale?
We have not proposed to do anything of that sort, Mr. Chairman.
Good. I'm glad. In light of that clarification, I want to give you an opportunity to comment on recent statements regarding the conclusion of EPA's draft report. After the issuance of the EPA's Pavilion draft report, the governor of Delaware said that this report validates his plans to veto gas drilling in the four-state Delaware basin. Was the governor wrong to extrapolate your results to the Delaware River Basin?
I've never met the governor. I don't know him, and I don't know the circumstances or the context, and I'm not about to tell him he was right or wrong, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'm just going to ask you, based on your knowledge of what is in of the potential uniqueness of the geology in Pavilion, Wyoming, is your impression that maybe the governor should have thought a little longer about that, or maybe looked into it a little different, or actually taken into account the geology of the Delaware River Basin before coming to that conclusion? Because it sounds like that's what the EPA suggests, that you have to take local geology into account.
I'm not in a position, Mr. Chairman, to criticize any governor.
Well, your former colleagues at the Environmental Defense Fund called the draft Pavilion report a, quote, wake-up call on the need for, quote, stronger regulation nationally on hydraulic fracturing. Now, are your former associates wrong to interpret the results in this way, broadly extrapolated to hydraulic fracturing anywhere in any geologic formation?
Haven't talked with them, Mr. Chairman. I haven't seen their comments in context. I'm not in a position to criticize anyone here other than to give you a better understanding of what we did at the Pavilion site.
Has your office had any communication with them at all?
Sir, there are 800 people in my office. I can't speak to whether anyone
would
has had any
would contact. The FOIA request that's been made regarding this information, would that be part of that FOIA request, because the FOIA request is solicited email responses, would we find that information out there? If you're unable to say whether you have had any communication with them,
I can tell you definitively I have not.
By any means.
Not about this particular.
Thank you very much, and Mr. Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Martin, you said, or Mr. Dr. Harris asked, if it was true that benzene was the only chemical that was above acceptable levels. Is benzene a known carcinogen? It is it not?
It is, Congressman.
Okay. And I think in your testimony earlier, you said that it was at 50 times the acceptable level?
I did, Mr.
So if it fell to half the what it was earlier, it was still 25 times acceptable level. Is that correct?
I believe your math would be correct, sir.
All right. Ms. Sagama, from your biography, the biographical information provided by the committee, your title is Vice President of Government and Public Affairs. That sounds like the title given to the lobbyist. Is that correct?
That is my title, yes.
All right. And looking at your educational background and your experience, it appears to be in information technology, computer stuff. The federal regs have a list of the scientific fields that are considered experts for purposes of hydraulic fracturing. IT is not one of them, and it appears that you know have no background in geology or toxicology or hydrology or public health or anything else that is one of the fields of expertise that are touched by hydraulic fracturing. Is that correct?
I'm not applying to be on the peer review of any of this report, but I am informed by my members who are do indeed possess those degrees and that expertise.
All right. Of course, they're not here to answer questions. Mr. Martin, we've heard that the contamination could have been caused by something else, by pesticides, by septic systems, by fuel stations leaking underground storage tanks, and that those were not considered. Did the EPA, in fact, consider and test for those other explanations?
Mr. Congressman, we did. In fact, we designed the first two rounds of testing to look very broadly at a wide range of contaminants that might be present. We've been able to rule out pesticides and other potential sources, including nitrates from agriculture or from dysfunctional septic systems. We've looked hard for a set of sources. We eliminated none going in. We have eliminated several in the process.
All right. There has been Dr. Goldstein in his testimony said part of the public's concern is the lack of disclosure of what the chemicals going into the ground are. I understand from Mr. Dahl. That they are now disclosing going forward, but how would it be helpful to you, and I'm not sure how thorough that disclosure is, but how would it be helpful to the EPA or anyone else studying groundwater contamination to know what chemicals were being used in fracking? Would it be helpful? Ms. Martin?
Congressman, it probably would be very helpful. We have actually been able to get from the company that operates this field MSDS sheets for some of the materials used in fracking, and that's been tremendously helpful.
Okay. You've been, ironically, you've been criticized by the members of this committee for a lack of transparency, but how would the transparency of the EPA's work be compared to the transparency of the company doing the drilling in CANA, as well as the state of Wyoming?
Congressman, we've worked closely and well within CANA on a number of issues, but we're still awaiting responses to a number of questions. We pounded them, including the results of the split sampling that they took during several phases of this investigation.
Dr. Goldstein, I understand that a conference medical experts recently urged that the rapid expansion of fracking for natural gas be, the term was paused, so that there could be research to determine the potential harmful effects on human health. Dr. Goldstein, it appears that you do have both the disinterest and the expertise to qualify as an expert in this area. What do you think of the idea of pausing, at least slowing the expansion, of which may happen anyway for economic reasons, or appears to be happening anyway for economic reasons, but pausing the expansion of fracking so that the scientific community can assess the risk of the technology.
I strongly support that, sir. The issue to me is if we have in Pennsylvania 20 years of Marcellus shale gas, we're going to get all of that gas. I see no alternative to the fact that we will drill all that gas. That's the only reasonable scenario. So what's the rush?
Not
in the Gulf.
Anywhere.
It's not going anywhere in the Gulf. Our Deepwater Horizon Commission said that we ought to be drilling in part because otherwise the Cubans or the Venezuelans or the Chinese might get that oil. But unless the Canadians can figure out how to frack underneath Lake Erie, that's staying with us and we're going to get it. We might as well optimize how we get it in such a way that we don't interfere with public health or the environment.
Mr. Chairman, my time has expired, and I know how persnickety this subcommittee is about the rules.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Miller. We like to play by the rules. I thought that's what we do. The chair now recognizes the chairman of the committee, Mr. Hall, for 5 minutes.
I have a question for Mr. Dole. On January 19th, 2012, EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson sent a letter to Governor Meade responding to his concern about the amount of sampling conducted during the course of his investigation. You aware of that?
Yes, sir, I am.
And in it, Administrator Jackson states, quote, "We have conducted four phases of sampling, each of which was designed in consultation with the state." Is that correct?
Sir, that is what she states in her letter, yes.
Yeah. Did this consultation take place? Now, you've not been transparent so far as I've listened to you here today. Can you give me an answer to that?
Are you asking me the question, sir?
No, I'm talking now to Mr. Martin.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. We consulted with a number of parties, and certainly including the state, at each phase of this process, including the development of sampling plans for the first two phases, the design of the well, the monitoring wells that were constructed in summer of 2010.
I'll get back to Mr. Dole. Did this consultation take place?
The way I understand it, sir, from the Department of Environmental Quality, they were involved in the initial sampling that occurred in the 2008 time frame. And then
what do you mean involved in?
They were notified and were aware that the sampling events were going to occur in 2009 and 10. They were also informed at the time, and because it wasn't with my agency, the speculation that I can address only as speculation is that they were informed that the monitoring wells were going to be drilled about the time that the drilling rig was moving to the site.
How involved was the state in the development of sampling and monitoring those plans?
I am not aware that we were involved at all, sir.
What would you have recommended to EPA if you had been consulted? You were not consulted, were you?
No, sir, we were not. The Oil and Gas Conservation Commission was not.
Do you know they contend that they were, and they've so testified under oath that they were?
They may have contacted the by email the head of the Department of Environmental Quality, but not the Oil and Gas Conservation.
They might have sent them an email. That's not consulting. That's their own arrogant approach to it. I think they just sent them an email. They didn't consult with them. You're not testifying that they consulted with them, are you?
No, sir, I'm not.
Then, since the states are responsible for regulating drilling protocols, did EPA apply for a permit or submit a drilling plan to the state of Wyoming, so far as you know?
Not as far as I know, sir.
Okay. You have any idea, Mr. Martin, why would the EPA administrator claim that her agency consulted with the state on designing the sampling plans if it had not occurred?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Dahl and
I... You haven't known when he asked you other questions about that.
I'm sorry, sir?
You've not been able to testify. You wouldn't cross the governor or anybody if you had information in front of you.
I think
you're under oath now. You know that, don't you?
I am, Mr. Chairman. Well, I guess I am. I believe we conducted significantly greater consultation than Mr. Dahl might be aware of. Early in the process, the Department of Environmental Quality for the state of Wyoming was designated as the lead agency for the state of Wyoming as part of this process. We consulted with them. We actually consulted with NCANA in designing the monitoring wells that were constructed in 2010. We have significantly greater consultation with the state than perhaps Mr. Dahl is aware of.
I understood that EPA will be selecting a panel of outside peer reviewers to take a look at its work. Mr. Martin, can you assure me that at least one person recommended by the state of Wyoming will be named to this peer review panel?
I believe, Mr. Chairman, that the administrator has told the governor that she expects that there will be at least one expert who meets all of the other qualifications for membership in an external peer review process, that there will be at least one person from Wyoming on the peer review panel.
The case, the Pavilion case that we're examining today, reflects a troubling effect by EPA to build a case for regulating and even shutting down unconventional oil and gas production around the country. And they're doing that all over the country, even out in Wyoming. And EPA is had it handed to them time after time by this committee and by the Committee on Science and Technology. I'm sorry to say the liberal press hadn't printed it properly, but they always say they need more investigation. But we've had people who've had years and years of experience and been here under oath that have testified that there's not any way in the world that fracking could have affected the drinking water in the examples that were given to them. You understand that?
Yes, sir. Is it a question?
In Pennsylvania, for example, EPA had recently, I won't ask that. It's important to recognize what EPA is doing in Wyoming is not isolated. They're going after fracking everywhere they can. I guess that's what I'm trying to tell you. But they've been through most of the jurisdictions here and have absolutely have had no proof, nothing testified under oath that would imply that fracking had damaged drinking water. Not that I know of.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to let me enter in two documents into the record that raise questions about EPA's commitment to getting the science right on hydraulic fracturing.
The two documents are right. Without objection. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I recognize the gentleman from New York, Mr. Tonko.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dahl, in reviewing your testimony, there at least appeared to me to be some inconsistencies, so that I would ask that perhaps you would clarify some points for me, if you could, please. I'll run through a few of these and then would like your comment. You indicate that the residents of Pavilion brought their concerns about water quality to the state in 2005. On page 2 of your testimony, and the state's investigation showed no impact from oil and gas development. But the drilling company entered into a voluntary remediation program in 2008 with the state, and I quote, because hydrocarbon impacts were discovered in groundwater. That from section 2.2 of public participation plan of Pavilion, Wyoming, dated April 2008. This conclusion apparently was based on a study done by Wyoming's Department of Environmental Quality. So could you reconcile that for me?
Yes, sir, I will. The work that was done in Pavilion by the Department of Environmental Quality goes back even before 2005. These are this is an old oil and gas field area. There were some pits that were identified and cleaned up, and further testing was done in that 2005 to 2008 time frame, and I believe that was why those pits were identified and put into the voluntary remediation program. There were over 60 pits reviewed, and then several, three or four, I'm not sure because that's the Department of Environmental Quality, but I think three or four were put into this voluntary remediation program. We have a group of individuals that are involved in a working group looking at these
pits and sites that were identified by landowners as concern, and reviewed that data again and found one other area that upon testing found that needed to be added to the voluntary remediation program. So that is hydrocarbons that were probably hauled in. This gas that's being produced in the Wind River Formation is a dry gas with very little liquids associated with it in terms of water or any kind of petroleum hydrocarbon.
And on page 5 of your testimony, you state that other possible sources of groundwater contamination remain unstudied. But notes from the April 2011 meeting indicate that they were researched by the Pitts Working Group, which stated other potential sources, including Greg Oberle of EPA, said a record search into septic systems, dumps, oil, and chemical storage sites is a work in progress. And that Kathy Brown of DEQ reported that a DEQ database search did not identify any potential sources, but she will need to do a paper record search to confirm. John Fenton said he needed more time to research county records and work with county planning to identify potential sources. There again, from the meeting notes of April 11th from the Pitts Working Group on under item 3.
Congressman, you are absolutely correct. Those are continuing to be a work in progress. These are part of the working groups that have been meeting. We met 4 times in 2011. None of this has been addressed in the draft report on Pavilion. It is a work in process, groups independent of the EPA's efforts on these two monitoring wells and what's put into that draft report.
So then are they unstudied or?
There's no conclusions drawn. The study data has not been accumulated that I'm aware of. So there, it is a work in process. So if I misspoke, it was only because the working groups, it is a work in progress.
I appreciate that. I also observed that several of the statements in your testimony suggest that you do not believe the residence wells are contaminated, that all substances are from natural sources. If so, why has the state offered 5 alternative methods for supplying water that you refer to in your testimony?
The 5 methods that were studied, where it's done, that study was done by the Wyoming Department of Water Development, and the Wyoming Water Development Commission, put out a report in September of 2011 stating that there were 5 potential solutions for those landowners for water. It did not address cause or that there was a requirement for that. They were tasked by the previous governor, Governor Friedenthal, to do that study, and that's what that is referring to in my written testimony.
So then are you suggesting there's no well water contamination?
What I'm suggesting, sir, is that that report is out there and that there is an effort by the current governor, Governor Mead, and state agencies to make sure that these people have clean drinking water. That may be a source. They'll probably have to form a rural water district to be able to do that, but that is something that the landowners themselves must initiate, not the state.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask that we put the documents that I referenced into the record, please.
Without objection. Thank you very much. I recognize the gentleman from California, Mr. McNerney, for 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for holding this hearing. I want to thank the witnesses for coming forth today. This is a contentious issue. In my mind, there's 2 potential problems with hydraulic fracturing. One is the actual contamination, and the other is the public perception of health risks from possible contamination. They're not unrelated, but they are separate in a sense. And in my mind, the Environmental Protection Agency's involvement and test program will help address both of those problems. It'll help make sure that it will help identify contaminations and sources of contaminations, and it'll help us put procedures in place to make sure that there's standards on the cement and casings to prevent contamination, which is a serious issue, but also help satisfy the public in terms of openness and transparency, that they're satisfied that the tests are being done and that everybody has access to the data. So what the EPA is doing in terms of doing the tests, releasing the data, and now they're going to go through the peer review process. This is all part of what has to happen to, in order to satisfy the public, in my opinion. So, Mr. Martin, we've heard a lot about hydraulic fracturing in the last several months, including potential contamination from waste disposal and storage and inadequate cement outside production casing. Can you briefly discuss the EPA's draft findings pertaining to the cement outside of the casings of some of the wells? In other words, what have you found about well integrity with regard to cement and casing?
Congressman, what we found was that most of the well production wells did not have surface casing that went below the depth of the deepest domestic drinking water well in the underground source of drinking water, the aquifer. We found weak or absent cement in many of the wells at depth, and that was one of the reasons we hypothesized that a potential pathway for vertical migration of the materials that we found at the deeper levels of the aquifer. It's a potential pathway. We posited several potential pathways. We were unable to identify any one as the most likely or the pathway.
Okay, good. Yeah, if you look at the theory, it's good. They have these casings and cement, and it's all sealed. But if there's integrity problems with the cement, then the whole thing goes out the window. And we need to make sure that there's procedures and standards in place to prevent that. We need the gas, and everybody wants to get to it. We just need to make sure that it's done properly. In my opinion, your involvement with the EPA is going to help us get there. Mr. Goldstein, I understand you have concerns such as problems with inadequate cement. Can you discuss this as well, please?
It goes back to what the public is hearing. The public is hearing that there's no problem with hydraulic fracturing, none gets to the surface, and at the same token, they're reading in the newspaper how a company's been fined $1 million and communities on drinking water because the cement casing blew. Well, it's all assumed to be hydrofracking. The fact that it's a cement casing in one part time, or a fact that there were drums on a surface about to be put underground and a truck backed into it and released the contents of the drums, these are all fracking fluid. They're all groundwater contamination from hydrofracking in the broader sense of the term. It's occurring. We're reading about it. So we can't ignore that this is going to happen. And as I showed you, some of the companies are, at least in terms of Pennsylvania State's Department of Environmental Protection, not following the rules very closely.
Well, what should we do, in your opinion, to make this as safe and procedure as possible?
I basically believe that we will know better whether industry, which is trying, I think, in many cases, as we've heard, very hard to do the best they can, will know how serious they are in a few months when EPA comes out with its draft best control technology. And will industry support that, work to develop best control technology, or will they stonewall these rules because they don't like the rules? That, to me, will be the test of how industry really responds.
Is the pavilion activity by the EPA, is that going to be beneficial in terms of us getting there, in terms of understanding what the potential problems are?
Well, I hope so. I go back to the time I was assistant administrator at EPA, a contentious time under President Reagan. There are two types of studies we do. Some fit very well into what Chairman Harris described as a superb scientific study initiated by EPA. Some are more responsive. They're more public health-oriented studies in that you're responding to the public. You haven't designed how they put those wells down and what's been released. It's not a matter of putting a well down and every 500 foot releasing a tracer and seeing if it came up in a randomized approach. This is a matter of being responsive. And as I read this report, I think it's got all the hedges and all the appropriate responses. And I'd like to see what happens with the peer review. I hope it is a good peer review that they use.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I yield back.
Thank you very much, and we will have one other round of questions. I'm going to, again, apologize to the witnesses for keeping it past noon, but this is such an important hearing. Mr. Dahl, in your testimony, you note that, quote, the draft report provides no data to show how these two EPA monitoring wells represent any water supply wells used by anyone in the Pavilion natural gas field. In your view, do the findings of the deep monitoring wells relate to drinking water issues cited by the complainants?
Mr. Chairman, I do not believe that that the report defines that or defends that properly. The actual information that we've seen from the data tells us that this gas and water that is found in these two monitoring wells is different than the gas and water that's found in the shallow drinking water aquifer. It's all the same formation. There's no barrier between the source rock at great depth and the formation that produces natural gas and serves as the aquifer.
So you don't believe that those 622 pages released last night is going to shed a little, is going to change your opinion? I guess you have to wait to see in what was released.
Yeah, I'd hate to speculate on what would be there.
And I'm going to apologize for the federal government for taking so long to release that. Mr. Martin, Interior Secretary Salazar has been quoted as saying, quote, the jury is still out, end quote, on the validity of the pavilion study. Similarly, experts in the Interior's Bureau of Land Management reviewed the draft report and communicated a number of concerns with the conclusions to EPA the week before it was released to the state. Specifically, BLM's comments, they questioned the, quote, questioned the statistical validity of the two EPA monitoring well locations, highlighted that there is, quote, a serious lack of data if one is going to arrive at a specific source for the observed contamination. Third, raised, quote, concern over the well development process and said that, quote, arriving at conclusions at this stage is hasty, in my opinion. And finally, the BLM concluded that, quote, the nature and extent of the contamination, possible pathways, and site conceptual models are not yet understood to the degree at which I would be comfortable assigning the source to anything, including hydraulic fracturing. Why do you think that the expert, that your experts are right and BLM's are wrong? And have you discussed this at all with the Department of the Interior?
Mr. Chairman, we had a series of meetings with both BLM and BIA, as well as with the state and with INCANA, including one working group meeting with all of the stakeholders, as well as certainly including the Bureau of Land Management. We're going to conduct an exhaustive, thorough peer review process. We're going to evaluate comments like that, which I have not seen, to be honest, and we're going to abide by the results of that peer review process.
Well, thank you. Let me ask a question. Ms. Sagama's testimony, or I guess it's not the testimony, but it is the critical review of the draft report prepared for the American Petroleum Institute, so it's not that witness's one, says, quote, the EPA draft report jumps to the conclusion that hydraulic fracturing fluids are the source of many of the compounds found in the water samples from their two deep monitoring wells and that those materials have migrated to shallower groundwater. Is that a fair representation of the conclusion of the study? That the sources of many of the that hydraulic fracturing fluids are the sources of many of the compounds found in the water samples?
I believe we said that it is likely the source.
Really? On page 33 and 39 are the two places in the report, and you've already testified, you've read the reports, I would point to you the page that had the other figures, but let's talk about page 33 and 39 because that's where the conclusions are listed. And the word likely is only used in one place. And it's only used to say that gas production activities have likely enhanced the gas migration. That's the only place likely is used. The other two places, and Dr. Goldstein would appreciate this, it says that the data best supports. Now, in medicine, if you have 10 differential diagnoses, but one really isn't likely, what you'd say is, well, you know, the data best supports this one, but there are these other 9 ones. And then you'd say, well, do I treat that because it's not likely, it's just best supported, if that treatment would make the other ones worse or result in the death of a patient if you misdiagnosed. Can you describe what the difference is between best supports and likely? Because the press release, and see, the whole purpose of this hearing is to say, look, you're jumping the gun, the press release says likely, but the draft report actually doesn't say likely about the migration of about hydraulic fluid contamination. Could you address that? That's very important because that's the crux here, because the press report said likely. The EPA concluded that it's likely that hydraulic fluids were the contamination, source of contamination. But that's not what the draft report says to my reading. Why is my interpretation wrong?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I would say that we looked at a wide range of hypotheses, including some that we have been able to discount based on the results that we have encountered in our research, that all of the materials that we found at depth, including the synthetic organic compounds, and there's a range of them broader than what Mr. Dahl referred to the fact that there are breakdown products of some of the materials that we found there. There's benzene, toluene, ethylbenzene, and xylenes. The very, very, very high alkalinity levels that we found, the absence of strong buffers, the fact that potassium hydroxide was used as a cross-linker and a solvent, and that aluminum chloride was used, things that account for the presence of both high potassium and chloride levels, as well as the very high alkalinity, the caustic level of alkalinity. There's a number of different...
Sure, I understand all that, but I assume that scientists wrote this report.
Absolutely, sir.
So why didn't they use the word likely with regards to hydraulic fracturing fluids? They didn't use the word likely. You used the word likely in your testimony, and your press office used the word likely in the press release, but the scientists didn't. They said best supports, and I'm going to use exactly the word, best fitting and best supports. Now, I've written many scientific papers, and when my p-value wasn't high enough, this is what I used. When I couldn't say it's likely and likely, of course, we all know you're an attorney by training, I understand. That's just more likely than not. That's 51% test. It's not a p-value less than 0.05. It's not 95% likely. It's just likely. But the scientists in the report didn't even use the word likely. Why did you choose to use the word likely in your testimony? You agreed with the conclusion that it was likely was the source. And the press release used the word likely. Why?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I believe that those are equivalent, that we have said a number of times that we haven't dispositive.
Mr. Martin, I will disagree, and I accept your answer, but I will tell you, there is a world of difference between best supports and likely. As an attorney, you ought to understand that, because my understanding is the word likely has a very specific meaning in a court of law. I now recognize the ranking member, Mr. Miller.
Dr. Goldstein, you're on a panel with a lawyer and a lobbyist, and you seem to be twitching at this last line of questions and answers. Do you have anything do you have an opinion about the questions that Mr. Martin has been fielding?
Quite clearly, they're simply the word likely is a problem. It always has been a problem. I think likely can be used in a situation where there's far less than 50%. I'm sure you use it in that way. And so I don't know why it doesn't sound any real different to me is what I'm hearing. Not likely, best supports, they're just sort of different ways of sort of saying the same thing. Now, they could be interpreted in different ways, quite clearly. And as I say, I read through the draft report having read some of the press accounts of it, and I thought, again, as a former assistant administrator, that it was appropriately hedged based upon not really having the data. By the way, I would say that this Pavilion report, well, it doesn't have the data because, as it says over and over again, this would be really a simple thing to do if there had been baseline studies. If you don't have baseline studies, you're responding to what there is public, you can't conceivably have a perfect randomized control trial. You're going to have some degree of uncertainty. I think what this tells us is that those companies which are paying for water sampling of local community folks who local groundwater are doing the right thing, and those who are not are just storing up a lot of trouble for themselves, because these kind of studies will come up again, and they're going to be the ones who are going to be sued for basically contaminating water.
Dr. Goldstein, I know that faculty humor is kind of an acquired taste, but there's a joke that administrators hate having scientists on their panels, on their committees, because when the information changes, they change their opinion. You never know where they stand.
Senator Muskie said it very well, as he wanted one-handed scientists, so he wouldn't have on the one hand this and on the other hand that.
Well, that was Harry Truman's line about economists. Mr. Chairman, in all the confusion of this hearing, I failed to move two documents into the record. The first is a report conducted in 2010 that is a survey of the health of residents of Pavilion. The participants, again, reported various health effects, headaches, sore throat, nausea, sinus problems, and other illnesses that are known to be associated with the contaminants that the EPA found in the drinking water in 2009. And the second, and I believe both these have been provided to the majority staff, the second is a letter to the subcommittee from Pavilion Area Concerned Citizens, the Powder River Basin Resource Council, the Western Organization of Resource Councils. This also was provided to the subcommittee with the perspectives of the people who are actually affected by the contaminated groundwater, none of whom were invited to appear at this hearing today. It urges the subcommittee to support the EPA's draft report.
Without objection.
All right. Mr. Dahl, you've said that you are doing the work of the citizens of that area, but you don't contend that the various folks who are members of these organizations, particularly the Concerned Citizens, what's the name of it again? The letter that I just introduced, the Concerned Pavilion Area Concerned Citizens, they're not outside agitators, right? They're not. They didn't come in from Oakland or Greenwich Village and just to request this review, right? They really live there in Pavilion and have right along. Isn't that right?
I don't know who the membership is, to be honest with you. I don't know if it represents all of the landowners there or not.
Do you know John Benton?
John Fenton?
Fenton?
I do.
Okay. Has he been right there in Pavilion right along?
I don't know when he moved to Pavilion. No, sir, I do not.
He's not an honest-to-God Wyomingian or whatever the phrase is?
I don't know when he moved to Pavilion. It was after the gas wells were drilled is what I understand, but I don't know the date.
Okay. Dr. Goldstein, your written testimony and your oral testimony, you said that the industry claims that hydraulic fracturing, the industry claims both hydraulic fracturing is this innovative new technology, and don't worry, it's been around for years, decades, no problems with it, and that there's some contradiction in that. Do you think that we have sufficient, or how would you describe the state of the science on natural gas drilling and fracking, and do policymakers have enough information to make informed decisions to protect public health?
It's easiest to answer the second question. No, I don't think that they do. I think that the idea that this has been around for so long and therefore don't worry about it is simply inappropriate. I mean, this is equivalent when you've got 5 million gallons versus 50,000 gallons of fluid with changing chemical structure. It's equivalent to saying, well, there's no difference between a two-ton bomb and a hand grenade because they're both explosives and we know about explosives. This is a tremendous increase in technology. We have in front of us all the time the industry folks in their commercials saying there's a wonderful new technology we're bringing that's going to get this gas. That's great. It is a wonderful new technology, but we have to be careful with it.
My time has expired, and I want to help the committee abide by the rules.
Thank you very much, Mr. Miller. I recognize the chairman of the committee, Mr. Hall from Texas, for 5 minutes.
Thank you. Mr. Martin, what involvement did the EPA headquarters have with your study?
The study, Mr. Chairman, was conducted by scientists within the Office of Research and Development and scientists at Region 8, which is the region that I run. We involve scientists from elsewhere in the agency on occasion, including the regional laboratory out of Pennsylvania, I believe it is, and that they were the people who did the work and wrote the study, or wrote the report, rather, sir.
Did the EPA people, or who reviewed the study plan?
The study plan?
Yes.
To the best of my knowledge, Mr. Chairman, that was just the scientists working on the report. I certainly never saw the study plan. It would have been developed, the original one, under the last administration, would have been 2008, so some years ago.
They review the protocols?
The protocols are standard and are in use throughout the agency, rather, and I don't believe anyone outside the scientists working on this report were involved in evaluating or identifying protocols, Mr. Chairman.
Did they approve of your media plan and your outreach to the media on a draft, non-peer-reviewed report?
I believe so, sir.
Tell us exactly what oversight or involvement EPA headquarters had with the Region 8 on this report and the media release. If you can do that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we briefed the upper levels of management on periodically as we were developing the report, as the scientists were developing the report more precisely. I know the administrator met with NCANA spoke with the governor of Wyoming late in the process. We have worked closely with the agency, including the folks to whom I report, in making sure that we were releasing the report in the way in which we could, the way in which best comported with the scientific report, a draft scientific report for which we plan to seek expert peer review. It's a very long, winding story, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I agree with you there. In light of the use of Superfund authority to conduct this investigation and the differing results that came from Region 8 and the Office of Research and Development, I'm interested in the relationship with EPA headquarters in carrying out the report, what that relationship actually was. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, the Assistant Administrator, Mr. Anastas, who was unable to be here today, was certainly involved in assuring that we were applying the strongest science, the best science, and applying all of the protocols that apply here.
Let me ask you this. How much has the EPA currently spent on the investigation, and what does it plan to spend in the future?
The first part of your question, Mr. Chairman, is easier to answer. It's roughly $1.7 million. We are now about to embark in conversation with the state of Wyoming, the tribes, USGS, and others about additional investigation at the site, and I don't know what that will cost or who will pay for it.
When will you know?
We haven't had our first meeting. We're hoping to do that soon, so I'm guessing relatively soon, sir.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much, the chairman. Nobody else on your side? Do you have any additional questions? I have another 5 minutes. We're going to have one more round of five-minute questions. We'll hold you a little bit longer because we need to get down to the very end of this and know what's going on. Mr. Dahl, in the draft report, EPA found, quote, a wide variety of organic chemicals, end quote, in its two monitoring wells, and I'm sure that's the basis of the conclusion that, again, that Mr. Martin has testified to, that, you know, these are hydraulic fracturing fluids. But could this be the result of EPA drilling its two monitoring wells into gas-producing zones? I mean, my understanding is they actually had blowout preventers on top of these wells that were supposed to be drilled, you know, into water aquifers, a little unusual. I have a well in my backyard. I don't think I put a blowout preventer on it when it was drilled. Could some of the contamination, well, it's claimed to be contamination, be the result of EPA drilling its two monitoring wells into gas-producing zones?
Mr. Chairman, the experts from the Oil and Gas Conservation Commission, the Department of Environmental Quality, and the Water Quality Office all believe that this is induced contamination due to the drilling and completion of these two wells.
And is it true, I think I read in the report, that actually there had been a, I guess it was called blowout or something, at a well in the area that was actually drilled for water, a relatively shallow well drilled for water. Is that correct?
That is correct. That happened.
A much shallower well than the EPA monitoring wells. Because I think that well was only several hundred feet.
The well was permitted.
The blowout well. Yeah.
Yes, that particular well was permitted to be a shallow water supply well, but was drilled beyond that permitted depth and hit into a zone where the drilling fluids were actually evacuated from the well bore in a loss of fluid, and uh-huh. then natural gas entered at that.
And at what depth was that, do you recall?
I believe that was in that 900 to 1,000-foot range.
So that was in the range of the EPA monitoring wells?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so you actually had a land, and I think a landowner did that,
yes,
right?
That is correct.
So they weren't doing a monitoring well. They were just trying to drill for water and found gas.
That well was permitted to be a water supply well, yes.
So it's not beyond the pale that the EPA drilled for water and found gas either at that depth.
You should expect depth the deeper you go in this formation.
That's what I thought. Mr. Martin, was EPA aware of this strong possibility? And is that why the agency used blowout preventers when they drilled the wells? I mean, my understanding is they had significant cost.
Now, I understand to the U.S. government cost sometimes doesn't mean a whole lot, but, you know, we want to know, I mean, I assume the EPA had a reasonable reason to believe that they could have a blowout, and that's why they spent, you know, the hard-earned taxpayer dollars to put a blowout preventer on top of this well. Is that correct? I mean, did the EPA assume that they, in fact, could be drilling into a gas strata?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Gas-containing?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, we knew that, I've forgotten the name of the individual who was drilling that well. We knew that he had experienced a blowout at about, I think it was 500-some feet, which was unusual. That's some anecdotal evidence we're continuing to investigate. But given the fact that a blowout had occurred, yes, we installed blowout protectors on the two drill rigs that drilled both of our monitoring wells out of a concern for the safety of the workers.
A concern, but knowing that, in fact, you could be drilling into gas, because I mean, and Mr. Dahl, let me address this question to you. You don't have to have a blowout when you drill into a, because my understanding is that the shallower strata, the gas could be under much less pressure. I mean, you could have gas under much less pressure.
That is correct, sir.
So, in fact, you could drill into, the, and not even know that you're drilling into a gas-containing substance, because there's no blowout. I mean, it's not like your blowout preventer would show that there's a rise, you know, spike in pressure. Wow, we hit something that's high pressure. You could drill that well, conduct everything, and, you know, by golly, you actually have some natural gas in what you find in the bottom of that well.
Typically, the use of water or just native mud that is mixed from the cuttings as you drill will be enough to control any of the low pressure that you would encounter until you set your surface casing. Then after you've cemented it back to surface, you would put on your blowout preventer and drill deeper, and that's required if you're drilling a gas well to depths here close to 3,000 feet into the natural gas zone.
Right. Mr. Martin, exactly why did you choose that deep? What was the rationale behind it? For the monitoring wells,
the depth
use? Yeah, why did you choose specifically to drill into a depth where you know, or I guess if you communicated with the U.S. Geological Survey, you'd know, or with the local, you know, Wyoming authorities, that you'd know that there was a chance that you would be hitting a natural gas while you're drilling a water well?
Mr. Chairman, we were the formation and the activity that has occurred there over the course of 50 or 60 years is complex, so one of, I think several of us have adverted to the fact that legacy pits, they're not pits attributable to the current operator, but that there are legacy pits that are contributing significant contamination to a relatively shallow part of the aquifer, that there are domestic drinking water wells, municipal wells, and stock watering wells that are drilled from relatively shallow depths to as deep as 800 feet, and we were looking to drill a well that sort of sandwiched those, a set of wells that are somewhat deeper but shallower than the production zone. So we chose about 800 feet in depth below ground surface and about 1,000 feet in depth below ground surface. The shallowest fracking has occurred at 1,200 feet. The shallowest fracking in the area of these two wells has occurred at around 1,600 feet. So we were trying to sandwich the domestic drinking water wells and the other wells so that we could get some better sense of whether there was a source of contamination that is deeper than those drinking water wells.
And let me just follow up, and I'll give the ranking member the extra time to even it up. But Mr. Martin, and you used the word, and words are important, and you know, I'm going to disagree with the doctor, and you have written scientific papers too. You know, you use words very specifically in your conclusions. And I disagree. I think the word likely, by the way, has a very different meaning from best explanation. Very, very different meaning. To a scientist, I think it's a very, very different meaning. But Mr. Martin, let me ask, because you say the word producing well, but that's what's significant here, because you could have small amounts of gas, not enough to produce at lower levels. And I think Mr. Dahl's testimony, somewhere in here, what I read, is that at those shallower levels, you could have low pressure that no one would drill to produce because you couldn't get gas out of it for commercial purposes, but it's there. So although you attempted to do what you're calling sandwiching, you're not sandwiching where And you're not saying, and again, I'm drawing the extrapolation to Marcellus Shale, where you've got, you know, a mile of bedrock between the two. You don't have a mile of bedrock here. You've got, and my understanding of the geology is, you know, you've got this bowl of potato chips, and by the way, there's connection between the two, and some of the superficial potato chips that have sand in it actually have low pressure gas, but no one would drill into it to produce, you'd have to drill lower. So do you agree that you drilled into a location that was known, because we know we had a blowout somewhere between 500 and 900 feet, known to have gas in it? Known. I mean, look, everybody knew there was a blowout there. It occurred at a depth shallower than you drilled your monitoring well.
We had mud logs, Mr. Chairman, that suggested that, in fact, you wouldn't find those levels of natural gas at that depth, but that the fact that there had been a blowout at shallower depths also suggested that something perhaps has changed, and you're absolutely right. There is no lithologic barrier that we know of that would prevent the migration of either gas or other fluids vertically from the production zone, and, in fact, we've posited several hypotheses by which that is occurring. And that's the reason we chose those depths, to get some sense of whether, in fact, there's a deeper source that we could intercept with those monitoring wells.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and defer to the ranking member. And you got 8.5 minutes to go.
I won't use it all, Mr. Chairman. Curiously, the draft report that we have been discussing all morning is not part of the record, and someone reading the transcript of this hearing might wonder if the draft report was written in crayon. It does appear that the draft report should be part of the record, and I move that it be part of the record.
I understand that we have no objection to parts of it, and it is sizable. I know, because I've read it through, and it's got a lot of appendices and things. But I will offer that our staff will work out, and we will include parts. I assure you we'll include parts of the draft report in the record.
Okay, and I assume that will be anywhere the word likely appears.
It only appears once.
Okay. Dr. Goldstein, you were very critical today of three advisory panels that have looked at hydraulic fracturing fracking. You've been very critical of their composition. Based upon your experience with EPA during the Reagan administration, you are very familiar with the EPA. I assume you're familiar with the EPA Science Advisory Board. And could you assess for us the composition of the SAB hydraulic fracturing, the fracking panel?
Well, they have a broad representation of the sciences. SAB, I think, is an excellent organization that does a very good job of representing all of the different scientific disciplines.
Okay. Chris Portier is the director of the National Center for Environmental Health at the Federal Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta. And before that, he was in the Triangle area of North Carolina. So I've met him, I know him, and I know his reputation, which is very good. And he has called for studies into hydraulic fracking's impact on public health. Effect on public health. He said more research is needed for us to understand public health impacts for natural gas drilling and new gas drilling technologies. That's similar to your own testimony today. Do you have a general sense of where the greater weight of scientific opinion is on the need for greater research?
I think Dr. Portier is correct in that. Dr. Birnbaum, who's head of the National Institute of Environmental Health Sciences, have also expressed themselves on the need for research on the mixtures issue. We had, with oversight of this committee, a lot of research on mixtures during the time of the Superfund, because you had unknown mixtures could appear. This needs to be repeated with using the newer toxicological approaches, using molecular biology to try to better understand what mixtures, how mixtures threaten the potential for adverse effects.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I yield back.
Well, thank you very much. And I want to thank all the witnesses for their testimony and the members for their questions. Again, I'm going to apologize as yet again for the delay at the beginning. The members of the subcommittee may have additional questions. As for the witnesses, we'll ask you to respond to those in writing. I will ask, because time is somewhat of the essence, because a comment period is limited on this study, that you be timely if at all possible. And I'll just leave that at that. leave it to your own figuring what timely is. The record will remain open for 2 weeks for additional comments from members. The witnesses are excused. The hearing is adjourned.